Let's turn to Nehemiah chapter 13, and we're going to read from verse 15. In those days I saw people in Judah treading wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing in sheaves, and loading donkeys with wine, grapes, figs, and all kinds of burdens which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I warned them about the day on which they were selling provisions. Men of Tyre dwelt there also, who brought in fish and all kinds of goods, and sold them on the Sabbath to the children of Judah and in Jerusalem. Then I contended with the nobles of Judah and said to them, "What evil thing is this that you do, by which you profane the Sabbath day? Did not your fathers do thus? And did not our God bring all this disaster on us and on this city? Yet you bring added wrath on Israel by profaning the Sabbath." So it was at the gates of Jerusalem, as it began to be dark before the Sabbath, that I commanded the gates to be shut, and charged that they must not be opened till after the Sabbath. Then I posted some of my servants at the gates, so that no burdens would be brought in on the Sabbath day. Now the merchants and sellers of all kinds of wares lodged outside Jerusalem once or twice. Then I warned them and said to them, "Why do you spend the night around the wall? If you do so again, I will lay hands on you." From that time on, they came no more on the Sabbath. And I commanded the Levites that they should cleanse themselves, and they should go and guard the gates to sanctify the Sabbath day. Remember me, O my God, concerning this also, and spare me according to the greatness of your mercy. Thus far. Let's begin by turning to the Lord in prayer. This is the day the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. Lord, we bless you for this gift of one day in seven when we can apply ourselves to these spiritual exercises of worship, of prayer and praise, and hearing your word, reading your word, hearing it preached. Lord, we thank you you've given us this day and these means of grace, and we know that you have promised to add the blessing. And so, Lord, we pray now that you give us help as we study these words. Lord, may they help us. May we receive them with meekness. May we be doers of the word and not hearers only. Lord, please give us your grace now. Give us help as we come to study your word. We ask this for Jesus' sake. Amen. There's a well-known TV presenter in the UK. His name is Dan Walker, and he's a committed Christian. He's very open about his faith, and recently he refused to take part in Strictly Come Dancing Tour. It's a show that he's connected with, and they were going on tour, and he refused to be a part of it because some of the shows were scheduled to take place on Sunday. And because of that, he refused. And it caused a little bit of consternation in the media and in the press, but he wouldn't be moved. And speaking in an interview, he explained, "Sundays are even more important than the best job in the world. For practical and spiritual reasons, it's really important to me. It's a personal decision I made for the good of my family, and I've managed somehow to maintain it for 20 years. I'm in the job because I love doing it, but it's not the be-all and end-all. Some things are even more important than work," what he was saying there. And that's very much the message that Nehemiah is communicating here to the people of Jerusalem in chapter 13, who seem to have let that principle slip, along with other areas of compromise that had begun to take place. If you can remember, last time we were in these verses, they had allowed an Ammonite called Tobiah, he was an enemy of God's people, to have his own place in the temple precincts. They'd also neglected their covenant commitments to tithe for the upkeep of the temple and temple servants. And now, on top of both of those things, there is this other area of spiritual slide that's taken place, and that is in the area of Sabbath observance. So that instead of keeping that day special and guarding it from anything that would try to spoil and intrude, they were treating it just like any other day. A day for business, a day for transaction and trade. And as such, this is something that Nehemiah, he tackles this head on in these verses. And it's something we want to look at this evening for a few minutes to see what lessons we can learn to help us guard against some of the pressures that we face in our own day. So we're going to look at these verses, verse 15 through to 22. Let's just read verse 15 again. "In those days I saw people in Judah treading wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing sheaves and loading donkeys with wine, grapes, figs, and all kinds of burdens which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day, and I warned them about the day on which they were selling provisions." So here is Nehemiah then. He's back in Jerusalem. This is probably around 433 BC. He has been away, if you remember. He's been back to Persia where he serves the Persian king Artaxerxes. Now he's come back to Jerusalem again. And upon his return, what does he see? He sees there is this spiritual decline that has taken place during these years that he's been away. This slow, steady slippage that's been taking place in the godliness and the devotion of the people. They have compromised with their enemies, such as Tobiah. They've let go their support for the house of God. And not only that, they've also, as we see here, they've become slack with regard to the Sabbath, God's holy day. You remember the commandment they were given back in Exodus chapter 20? Verses 8 through 11, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. That was the law. That was the commandment. Very clear, no work, not for you, your son, your daughter, your servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger within your gates. It's a day of rest, a day to cease from one's labours. That's what God had told them, that was the commandment they were to observe. And yet for many of the people, they had by this time developed a kind of an ambivalent love-hate relationship for the Sabbath. They liked the fact, many of them, that for one day they didn't have to work. And yet there were many also who actually didn't want to stop work. They liked to work and they liked the money that they got from their work. Even back in Amos's time, that's some 400 years before the days of Nehemiah, we read of Amos chiding the people for their discontent at not being able to trade on the Sabbath. And then by the time you get to the likes of Jeremiah and Isaiah, you find these long discourses by the prophets. Again, they're reproving the people for their resentment of the Sabbath day. It had become a burden to them. It was a hindrance to them. They couldn't trade. They couldn't make profit on that day. So they grumbled and they complained, and eventually more and more they began to ignore it. And that's what had happened here. In Nehemiah's time, despite the pledges of commitment that they made earlier, that covenant commitment that they'd made just a few years before, Nehemiah comes back now, and what does he find? He finds the city's packed. The streets are packed. The streets are full. Their traders are out. The cattle are carrying their wares through the streets. And the men are there at the press. And they're trading out the grapes at the wine press to make wine. And this is the sight that greets Nehemiah upon his return. It's a picture of slippage, backsliding, decline, as the people have slipped back into their old ways of ignoring God's day and going about their work. Probably not something that they deliberately set out to do. It probably wasn't the case that they got up one Saturday morning and determined that they would deliberately defy the commandments in that way. No, this is, as with most types of declension, it's the slow leak. Do you remember we said a few weeks ago, the blowout on your car tyre? Probably most of us have never had a blowout, but many, many of us have had the slow leak. And you go to your car and you find, oh, I've got a flat. That's much more common. And that's how it is usually with backsliding. It's a gradual process of decline. So probably with this, there was some process of rationalization had gone on. Well, it's harvest time, isn't it? This is our busiest time of the year. What else can we do? We've got to get out there today and sell, because otherwise, I mean, these grapes are going to go bad, aren't they? We need to get out there and sell today. It's probably how it started. But then as the months went by, it was, well, Saturday today, isn't it? Yeah, that's our busiest day. That's the best day. That's when the foreign merchants come through. This is the time to get the best deals. We've got to get out there and trade today if we want to stay competitive, if we want to get the best deals. That's probably how it started. So that before long, not only was the day taken up with buying and selling and trading and transacting among themselves, but verse 16 tells us they were actually giving foreign merchants a place to set up in the city. They let them in. They gave them permission to open up their stores 7 days a week. And so this is what Nehemiah sees upon his return. This is the state of affairs that he finds upon his return, and he's shocked. He's dismayed. He is incensed. And we're going to think more about his reaction in a moment. But before that, just notice what he does, first of all. Notice the steps that he takes to address this. He rebuked those who were working and selling on the Sabbath, first of all, verse 15, and he made them stop. Then he rebukes the nobles and the leaders of the people for allowing them to do it. What is this evil thing you do? Verse 17, by which you profane the Sabbath day, he says to them. You know, how can you allow this? How can you permit this? Don't you realize the consequence of something like this? Don't you realize what happened to us before because of this? I mean, it's this kind of thing, he says, verse 18. This is what got us into Babylon in the first place. And now, what are you doing? You're trying to bring all that on us again? Haven't you learned? Haven't our own history taught you anything here? What you're doing is not only sinful, this is dangerous as well. One of the commentators on this book puts it this way. As the city's governor, Nehemiah knew that keeping the fourth commandment was a matter of public safety. So those are two things that he does there. He stops them, he rebukes the leaders. And then thirdly, a very practical thing he does. In verse 19, he shuts the gates. He posts some of his servants at the gates so that no more burdens can be brought in. He closes the gates. But then notice verse 20, some of the merchants, these foreign merchants, were still continuing to hang around. Hanging around the city gates. They want to get back in as soon as they can. It's a sort of a pressurizing technique, tempting the people to come back out and to trade with them once again. And so Nehemiah deals with that as well. Verse 21, I warn them, why do you spend the night around the wall? If you do so again, I will lay hands on you. And that's a phrase which I think we can be fairly sure doesn't carry the New Testament meaning of the term. Nehemiah wasn't thinking of ordaining these men to ministry. He is got something a bit more robust and a bit more combative in mind here. He's telling them to clear off in no uncertain terms. Because as far as Nehemiah is concerned here, there aren't going to be any more violations in this way. There aren't going to be any more temptations, for that matter, for the people to violate the Sabbath in that way. And so he sends these men packing, we might say. Now, what do we make of this today? How do we view a passage like this today? Because today, as you know, we live in an age, generally speaking, when people have very little, if any, regard for the fourth commandment. Even in some evangelical churches, many places today, they're falling over themselves to tell you why you don't need to keep the fourth commandment, rather than why we should. And so, living, moving, breathing in an atmosphere like that, we can get a bit of a shock when we come to a passage like Nehemiah chapter 13. And there can be some who would look at this and say, hey, Nehemiah, cool down. Nehemiah, calm down. Cool your boots, man. What are you getting so worked up about? What are you getting so hot under the collar about keeping a day? That's the way many people today would respond to what they read here. And so to understand Nehemiah here, we do need to do a little bit more background work. We need to remember what the Sabbath was intended to mean for God's people. The Sabbath was given to them as a sign. That's one thing. It was a covenant sign. Like circumcision, it was given to mark them out as a special people, a special possession who belonged to the Lord. None of the other nations kept a Sabbath. None of the other nations observed one day in seven for rest. It was only Israel among the people who did that. So it was a sign to them, it was a reminder to them of their relationship to the Lord. And also, just as importantly, their redemption. Their redemption by the Lord. Redemption from bondage in Egypt in Deuteronomy chapter 5. That's the other passage where, along with Exodus 20, you find the Sabbath commandment set forth there. Deuteronomy 5, observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your ox, nor your donkey, nor any of your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. Then listen to this, verse 15. And remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. And so the Sabbath then was a gift. It was a reminder to them of the redemption they had. Redemption from bondage where they were slaves. Because what do slaves do? They work. They have to work. They can't stop working. They have to work and work and work, and they don't stop. Just like the Israelites were made to do in Egypt. But when you're set free, when the chains are taken off and you're liberated from bondage, then what can you do? Oh, you can enjoy rest. Rest. Rest now, can't you? Only a free people can rest. Only a free people can enjoy Shabbat. Rest. And that's what the Lord had done for his people. That's the blessing he wrought for his people. He freed them from bondage in Egypt so at last they can enjoy Shabbat. Rest. And so as a mark of that, and as a mark of their gratitude to God for that, the people of God were to be a people who kept the Sabbath and enjoyed the Sabbath rest. It was a mark of who they are, a mark of who they belong to, and what he's done for them, redeemed them. He set them free by his power. The other nations didn't have that. The other nations, they didn't enjoy that. They had no redemption. They had no rest. They had no Shabbat. They had only work, 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 and more work. And that's what slaves do. They work and work and never stop working. And as we see here, at the same time, they have no qualms about imposing that on people who want to enjoy Shabbat. And you see that here with these merchants, these traveling salesmen clamoring, desperate to get into the city, clamoring, imploring to get in there and to trade with the people of God. No matter what time it was, no matter what day it was, didn't matter to them. They didn't care. They didn't care what day it was. Sabbath rest meant nothing to them. The Sabbath day meant nothing to them. And so they were quite happy if God's people started to think that way too. And so that's the situation you have here. It's the situation that Nehemiah finds when he comes back. And so now you start to see why Nehemiah reacts the way he does, why he so forcibly evicts them the way that he does. Because these people, by their clamoring, by their pressurizing tactics, they're calling out and clamoring for trade. What are they doing? They're presenting temptation, a temptation to the Jews to forget about God, to ignore the God who made them and who saved them and who redeemed them, and instead to join with them, join with them in all their business and trade and money-making schemes. These people who have no God, those for whom actually business and trade and money-making, that is their God. That's what's going on here. That's the temptation here, to leave God, the worship of the one true God, and to go and worship, quote-unquote, worship with them instead. That's what's going on. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that we face today, isn't it, as Christians? It's the kind of pressure today. Because by and large, you know, we live, as we said, we live in a pagan, secular culture, a society that largely refuses to recognize and acknowledge and worship God, a society that has no time for God, and a society for whom we have to say that business and trade and doing transactions and making money, that is the ultimate God. I remember reading a quote from Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft, one time. And in this interview, the person asked him why he didn't believe in God. And one of the things he said was this: "Just in terms of allocation of time resources, religion is not very efficient. There's a lot more I could be doing on a Sunday morning." That's the mindset of many people today, isn't it? But it's also the mindset of these merchants here. In Nehemiah 13, from Tyre, this is their mindset. It's work, it's work, it's work. That's what it's about. That's their God. Business and work. And because they don't know the one true God, they have no rest from their work, and they don't want God's people to have rest from their work either. And that's how it is very much for us today, isn't it? We today live in a society where they are quite literally clamoring at the gates out there, aren't they? Banging on the doors for us to come and trade and enter into business with them. That's how it is today. It didn't used to be like that. You know, even I can remember when I was a boy. This is going back a few years now, but growing up in Norfolk in England on Sunday, now basically nothing was open. Everything was closed. Everything was shut. No shops, no businesses were open on a Sunday. In fact, there used to be a phenomenon. It was known as the Sunday afternoon driver. And basically what it was sometimes it'd be an elderly person or maybe a nervous driver. And what they would do is they would take advantage of the quieter roads on Sunday to go out, and they'd kind of dawdle along at 20 or 30 miles an hour. And it was a thing, you know, oh, there's a Sunday afternoon driver. But now there's no such thing, because the roads are as busy as ever. They're absolutely packed because, well, Sunday's just another day. It's just another day to do business, to do trade, and to transact. And the pressure is on us too to do the same, to forget our rest, to forget our God, and to join in the worship of the gods of work and money. That's the pressure that we're under. But what is it that we're doing when we yield to that? We're going back again to bondage. Dale Davis, in his study on Nehemiah, he puts it like this. He says, "It is a choice of bondage, for you are deifying work, subjecting yourself to a continuous treadmill, which Yahweh meant to interrupt weekly. But you are saying, no, I want to be a slave. I want to return to Egypt. I want to run frustrated and exhausted to Walmart and Target and Dillard's on the Lord's Day. I want to pay bills then. I want to complete seminary assignments then. I want to wash my car and mow my lawn and work on my income tax. I want to be a slave. I do not want rest or quietness or solitude." Yahweh's pattern is work 6 days and stop for 1 day. It is a way of saying that work is not your God. These principles remain for the people of God, even though our culture and government is non-covenantal and pays no attention to them. So you see what he's saying? He's saying we are God's people. These things out there, they're not our gods. Work is not our God. Business is not our God. Career is not our God. We belong to the one true and living God who made us and who redeemed us. He's the one who set us free. He's the one who's given us true rest. And so as a sign that we belong to him, it's our delight and desire to keep that day and to enjoy rest. Now, what does that mean? I mean, how does that work out? What does it look like? One of the things it means is, like Nehemiah, we need to be careful to guard it and to protect it. Because as we see here, there are many pressures, aren't there, that can come in. They're hammering in on the gates, as it were. They're calling us away from our rest. And so we need to be careful to guard it. Not that we're called to do so by force. You know, we do need to be careful when we come to a text like Nehemiah chapter 13. There are some things here which are peculiar to the Old Covenant. Nehemiah himself was a unique individual. He was a religious and a civil leader. So he has to enforce the civil law here, under which there were very strict penalties attached to Sabbath breaking. Even the death sentence on occasion. Well, the civil law has now been abolished. There's no death sentence for Sabbath breakers. The same with the ceremonial law, the law with regard to sacrifices and offerings. That was a system designed to point us to Jesus Christ. And now, with the coming of Christ, that whole system has been fulfilled in him. And so we're no longer under ceremonial law either. But there are aspects to Old Testament Sabbath teaching which were part of and enshrined in the moral law, the Ten Commandments. One of which is, of course, the fourth commandment: remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Remember it, keep it, observe that day. Still today we're to do that. Still today. That's a binding commandment upon our consciences. The Westminster Confession puts it like this: keeping the Sabbath holy is a positive, moral, and perpetual commandment. Perpetual meaning it's still in force for us today. It's a moral commandment for us to keep today. It's a day for us to keep today. Not the seventh day, of course, with the coming of Christ, his death and resurrection. Christ, who is Lord of the Sabbath, the day has changed from Saturday to Sunday, from the seventh day to the first day of the week when he rose from the dead. It's the Lord's day now. That's the day when the early church began to meet together. So that's the day that we are to keep and to guard, a day in which we are to bar the gates, as it were, against the clamour and the heckling of our secular culture. There's a hammering at the door all the time, demanding that we forget our God and forsake our rest and join in with them in the worship of their gods instead. That's going on, isn't it, all the time? Do you feel that? You feel that pressure? Do you feel that clamour that's out there, that pressure on us to make this day just like any other? And so let me ask you, are you able to guard against that? How successful are you in guarding, preserving, protecting Sunday as a day of rest? It can be complicated in some areas, we have to say. You know, we live in a complex, economically advanced society. There are many pressures, there are many dilemmas that we face today. It's not always an easy thing to do. There are some difficult waters to navigate. So how are we to do that? I just want to read a section from a sermon by Phil Ryken on this subject. He was the former minister at 10th Presbyterian in Philadelphia. I think he's still the principal now at Wheaton College in Illinois. And this is a sermon he preached on the fourth commandment. And I'm just going to sort of a couple of paragraphs, but I think it's very helpful, just kind of working through the practicalities of this. And so he says the businessman should rest from his business, the housewife from her housework, the student from his studies. Of course, Christians have always recognized that some work is necessary. Workers that provide medical care or preserve public safety need to do their jobs, as do ministers and various workers in the church. There are also some basic daily chores need to be done, but this is a day to close the calendar, go off the clock and put away the to-do list. It is a day to step out of the frenzy, stop buying and selling, and quit worrying about the profit margin. In a culture that increasingly treats Sunday like any other day of the week, thereby turning what is sacred into something secular, we need to resist the tendency to let our work enslave us. Keeping the Lord's Day holy is the biblical answer to workaholism. At this point, many Christians still want to know what they can and cannot do on the Sabbath. Can I watch TV? Can I play frisbee? Can I go to a restaurant? Can I catch a flight back home? Can I play Monopoly? Or do I have to stick to Bible trivia games? The danger in making universal applications is that we're prone to Pharisaism. So it is easy for us to slip back into legalism. In keeping the fourth commandment, there is room for Christian freedom, the wise exercise of godly judgment. For example, even the Puritans recognized that there were times when it might be appropriate, even necessary, to dine at a public inn. However, when we start asking these kinds of questions, it's usually because we want to know what we can get away with. We want to know how far we can go without actually breaking the fourth commandment. But if we are looking for a loophole in the Lord's Day, then we are missing the whole point of the fourth commandment. God is calling us away from our own business to transact the most important business of all, which is to glorify Him in our worship. And when we try to make as much room as we can for our own pleasures, then we miss the greatest pleasure of all, which is fellowship with the living God. Our problem is that we find it so hard to take genuine delight in the sanctified pleasures of God. Dare I say it, God bores us. We are willing to spend some of our time worshipping Him, but then we feel like we need a break. And so we go right back to the world's lesser pleasures. But the more we learn to delight in God, the more willing we are to keep His day holy. And then we discover that we are able to answer the questions that once seemed so vexing. Can I take a job that will require me to work on Sundays? Is it okay for me to catch up on my work? Should we let our kids play Little League on Sunday? Is it a good day for watching commercials? Most of the practical applications are easy when we want to honour the Lord on His day. The strain and struggle come when we want to use it to do our own thing. And then he tells the story of a man who was approached by a beggar on the street. And the man saw the beggar and he wanted to help him. And so he reached into his pocket to see what he had. And he had $7 in his pocket. And feeling somewhat sorry for the beggar, he held out 6 bills. And the beggar snatched those 6 bills. And then with the other hand, he swiped the man across the face and took the other bill as well. Ryken says, what do you think of a beggar like that? Don't you think he was a scoundrel? Then what do you think of a sinner saved by the grace of Jesus Christ who insists on taking 7 days a week or even 6.5 for himself? It's not our day, ultimately, is it? It's His day. The seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord, your God. It's a day to be kept for Him, to be kept holy for Him. Holy means to be set apart, doesn't it? In fact, in the Bible, when you read that something is to be kept holy, that usually means for worship. It usually means that person, that thing, that object is to be set aside for worship. And that's really the best way to understand the Sabbath day as a day of rest, set aside for worship. It's a day in which we're free. We're absolutely free. The whole day is free for worship. And that's what we can do by coming together in a place like this for corporate worship, or even at home, isn't it? Spending time in prayer and reading and meditation, you know, what the old Puritans would call the private exercises of devotion. We have a whole day, a whole day given to us for that, a whole day that we can set aside for that. What a blessing. What a privilege. And so we don't need to go joining in the rat race, the trading, the transacting. We can have this day, the whole day, to refresh our souls through communion and through worship. That's why I put that quote in the bulletin this morning. I don't know if you saw it there. This is Thomas Watson. He says the result of all this, is that, quote, "The heart which all the week was frozen on the Sabbath melts with the word. This day a Christian is in the altitudes," he says. "He walks with God and takes, as it were, a turn with him in heaven." So are you doing that? Are you using a day like today to do that, to take a turn with him in heaven, to melt your cold heart under the warm rays of his word? That's what the day's for. That's how Nehemiah viewed the day. He knew that's what the day was for. And that's why when he saw what he saw in Jerusalem, he reacted the way he did. And maybe it's something that we need to take to heart this year as well. Because here we are, we're on the first Sunday of the year, isn't it? And in God's providence, here we are. We've come to these verses in Nehemiah chapter 13. And so you want this year to be a year of growth and progress spiritually. You want this to be a year in which you know God's presence and power and blessing and help in your life. Well, here at the beginning of the year, he's showing us how. Nehemiah chapter 13, verse 15 to 22. Or Isaiah puts it this way in chapter 58, verse 13. "If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honorable, if you honor it by not going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find joy in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride in triumph on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken."